This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington, in for Joshua Johnson today. Have you ever been to the UFO Welcome Center in Bowman, South Carolina? How about the world's largest teapot in Chester, West Virginia? The International Banana Museum in Mecca, California? Or the Medusa Tree in Hobson, Montana? Well, these are just a few of the hundreds, probably thousands, of quirky, weird, and kind of random, almost always fun roadside attractions spread across the United States. And they're the ones that you told us about. We've got a map of your submissions, your favorite roadside attractions, on our website at the1a.org, because today we're looking at the weird and wacky sights that you just have to pull over and see. Americans have been doing it for generations. These days, it's for the selfie, but it's always been for the story. Together, these roadside attractions tell us something bigger about our own country, how the rise of the automobile and highway shaped our country, and the creative entrepreneurial people along those roads. We'll get to all that right after you hear this.
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
In recent months, it's become a familiar story. A powerful man brought down by accusations of sexual harassment and assault.
And one of the actresses took me aside and said, hey, try not to be alone with him.
This week on Hidden Brain, we take a closer look at one of these stories and ask a simple question. Why now?
Joining me now from San Francisco is Doug Kirby. He's the publisher and founder of Roadside America, the online guide to offbeat roadside attractions. Hi, Doug.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Great to have you. Also with me from Roanoke, Virginia, Mark Klein, artist and preservationist known for the popular roadside attractions, including Dinosaur Kingdom and Foamhenge. Mark Klein, welcome to you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're going to talk about Dinosaur Kingdom and Foamhenge for sure. Doug, your website is dedicated to documenting America's roadside attractions. That term is a little bit difficult to pin down. What exactly is a roadside attraction? Because I've got all kinds of weird, quirky museums that I like and that I've been to. I'm not sure if they qualify.
They probably do. We started with a smaller definition years ago, and it kept expanding. So it can be anything from a little quirky museum to a classic theme park, giant statues, odd buildings and architecture, maybe a folk art environment that's just grown out of control along the highway.
Now, you talk about growing out of control. How has your list grown over the years?
Well, we feel like we've become like one of these attractions where we just didn't know when to stop building. So we've got over 15,000 places on the website.
An attraction that doesn't know when to stop building sounds to me like this is a phenomenon maybe that happens alongside the road as well, sometimes when somebody gets creative.
Yeah. In fact, these things go through a life cycle. Somebody has an idea and it starts to get big enough to where people notice it and pull off the road. Then the local newspaper does a story. Some of these things eventually get a national or international attention, and a lot of them are still out there.
Now, Mark Klein, you've created a number of well-known spots. I mentioned Foamhenge, which is a styrofoam replica of Stonehenge. Dinosaur Kingdom, very well-known, located in Virginia. Talk about other roadside attractions that you're behind.
Well, first of all, I can't believe I'm on the radio with Doug. Doug!
Hey, Mark.
Hey. How you doing?
Doug is the archivist of your world,
yeah,
right, Mark?
Yeah.
I mean, he's
well,
the man.
You know, Doug has been covering my work for many years, and we have sort of a connection there. But, the thing about the roadside attractions as they were, I'm just like anybody else. You know, I started out with a big dream. My first attraction, so to speak, was, and I learned this at a very early age, I was 7 years old, and I created a Statue of Liberty out of snow in my front yard. And guess what? Out of the thousands of people, kids that were building snowmen, guess who got their picture in the newspaper? You know, because I built, a snow woman. So, I mean, I learned at a real early age, if you do something a little offbeat, a little bit different, then you get the publicity for it. And, you know, essentially that's what all these other businesses have learned over the years. You get the bug, you get the fever, and you want to do something, you know, that's more of an attraction getter, you know, paint this if it's just painting your mailbox pink, anybody can be a roadside artist. And I think that's the, you know, one of the big allures of the whole thing. I mean, it's open to anybody. Anybody can do something and put it out there. But some of us go a little bit further and, you know, turn this into a whole attraction or some way to attract people into your store.
Yeah, well, often they're giant animals, giant men, giant women. Giant seems to be a big theme. We'll talk about that. Sometimes they're museums. Sometimes they're just businesses, like a place you can buy a hot dog that's shaped like a giant bulldog. I think I read about that as well. I like the Mutter Museum in Philly, which is a legit museum, but it's filled with medical...
Dead people.
Dead people and medical oddities of all different kinds, human diseases. It's macabre, but it's a lot of fun. I've heard about the Museum of Natural and Artificial Ephemerata. Outside of Austin, Texas, there's the sculpture world of Dr. Evermore in Wisconsin, an outdoor sculpture park that I've heard a lot about from my friends in Wisconsin. Doug, I guess these are probably in your book, but there's a big growing list here. Tell me about some of your favorites.
Well, the Dr. Evermore built a thing called the Forevertron, and originally we found out about that because there was an attraction called the House on the Rock in Wisconsin. That's this huge, great tourist attraction, kind of a classic place, but we heard Dr. Evermore was the junkyard for House on the Rock. It turned out that wasn't true, but he did have this whole other thing going where he takes a scrap metal and creates time machines and alien craft and strange musical birds and things. So there's so many different ways that somebody can approach getting your attention on the road. It can be a large statue. It can be a tiny thing. It can be a tiny church. We have a whole list on our site of who's got the smallest church. So those are
the smallest.
Know, I mean, and it starts to get ridiculous. We had to make some rules like people have to be able to fit into it. It has to have at least one service every year.
Right. Not a museum for ants, in other words. I get that wouldn't be fair. Well, we've been getting tons of responses from 1A listeners here, their favorite roadside attractions on Twitter. Deb sent us a few recommendations in Minnesota, the Jolly Green Giant, and the deepest place you can go in America, which is a mine. In South Dakota, the 6-ton prairie dog and Wall Drug Store. Several listeners mentioned Wall Drugs, Doug. What is that?
So Wall Drug, we, in one of our early books, we made that one of the 7 wonders of roadside America. It's a place that started just as a drugstore, and the guy who created it realized that if he offered free ice water and put that advertised on billboards, that people would pull off. So the Wall Drug became famous for having billboards hundreds of miles away from before you got to the little town of Wall. If you go there now, the town of Wall is essentially Wall Drug. It's just a giant tourism complex with restaurants and souvenir shops and arcades and things for the kids to do.
Well, Mark, I want to alert you. Here's a voicemail we got from a listener about one of their favorite roadside attractions in America. I think you're going to like this one.
Hello, this is Glory June from Indianapolis, Indiana. But I'm talking about a roadside attraction not very far from you in Winchester, Virginia. It's Dinosaur Land. I love it. It was created probably around 1960. It's got over 50 life-size dinosaurs, a huge giant shark into whose mouth you can crawl. There's a giant King Kong into whose hands you can climb up. It's a wonderful thing, and it's certainly not just for kids, unless you count kids as being several decades old.
Now, Mark Klein, that's got to be music to your ears. Dinosaur Land left an impression on you, too.
Dinosaur Land is I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it's from the 60s. I grew up going to Dinosaur Land. I mean, our grandparents lived in Baltimore, and so that was a stop along the way. And, you know, it hadn't changed much over the years, except for the dinosaurs that I've added to it. You know, because it was such a big inspiration to me. I remember one time I begged my dad, let's stop here. And he kind of hesitated, but I think I finally talked him into it because he, you know, realized the place was closed and he didn't have to spend the $1.50 to get me into it. But we were able to look through the fence. And I think, you know, I was about 12 years old and we were just kind of looking through there. And I said, something like, you know, Dad, I'm going to build these when I grow up. And he looked down at me and said, son, if that's what you want to do with your life, there's nothing that can stop you. You know, and those words resonated with me. You know, and now not only do I, you know, did I grow up, you know, building dinosaurs and dinosaur parks and doing stuff for Dinosaur Land, but the man who originally built Dinosaur Land, his son called me a few years ago and is now hiring me to build dinosaurs for his attractions down in North Carolina and South Carolina at the Myrtle Beach and whatnot. So, I mean, so it's gone full circle. I mean, these things never really... They just never really die out, never really become extinct, pardon the pun.
Well, a lot of roadside attractions center on the theme of world's largest. Tina told us over email about the world's largest drive-through, the Varsity in Atlanta. I've been there. John on Facebook mentioned the world's largest ketchup bottle in Colesville, Illinois. Here's Sharon, who left us a voicemail as well.
My name is Sharon, and I live in Roanoke, Virginia. I still tell people about stopping in Garden City, Kansas, to look at the world's largest hairball. It weighed 55 pounds when it was removed from the stomach of a cow. It looks like a big, dark, brown felt ball. It's really beautiful. I urge everyone to stop and see it.
The world's largest is a big deal in your world.
Oh, yes, yes. No, there's always constant battles between the giant chairs and somebody trying to outdo somebody else's claim to fame. So we love to keep track of where those things are.
Even a hairball.
Even the world.
Yeah, and I was just thinking there's three or four of those in other museums.
Joining me now from Boulder, Colorado is Amy Webb. She's Senior Field Director at the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Amy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Amy, I'm glad you're here because your specialty is Route 66, one of the most well-known roads in America, connects the Midwest to California. And it was a primary route for people migrating west out of the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. It's lined with noteworthy attractions and architecture, but you say that those attractions are now in danger. What's the state of the famous Route 66 and the attractions along it today?
Well, that's right. In fact, the National Trust listed Route 66 on our 2018 list of most endangered places. And, you know, of course, Route 66 runs for 2,400 miles. There are many roadside attractions that have been lovingly restored and revitalized. However, with that kind of a distance and with urban sprawl, cities that are expanding, many sites are in danger of then being demolished to make way for new sites. We've seen that happen. And Route 66 also runs through a number of rural areas, some that are economically depressed. And that means that in some cases, you have places that are perhaps abandoned or where there are owners who just don't have all of the resources they need to fix them up.
Amy, you're part of an initiative to designate Route 66 as a National Historic Trail. What would that do in a practical sense? And give me a sense of the history along Route 66 that you really think is worth preserving for the American collective memory.
Right. We're very supportive of Route 66 becoming a National Historic Trail if we can do that. And we have till the end of the year to try to get that legislation through Congress. It would provide both technical assistance and access to financial assistance through the National Park Service for some of these mom and pop sites that are along Route 66. And so to kind of help make that happen, we had a fantastic road trip this summer with an Airstream trailer. This was a trip sponsored by State Farm. And who knew? State Farm actually got their start as a mom and pop business in Illinois. But our goal for the road trip was really to raise awareness of these great roadside attractions along Route 66 and some of the needs that they have. And a key piece was an online petition at preserveroute66.org, where we were trying to get the public to come online and to show their support for Route 66 as a National Historic Trail.
Well, we heard from listener Christine from Flagstaff, Arizona, about the abandoned KOA campgrounds at Two Guns, Arizona, something of a Route 66 ghost town. She shared a couple of pictures with us. You can find our listener source map of today's segment page on today's segment page at the1a.org. Tell us about some of the other noteworthy roadside attractions along Route 66. Dan emailed us about a favorite roadside attraction of his and what he and his wife discovered next to it. Of all the places we've been, our favorite is the Blue Whale of Oklahoma, which we found while driving Route 66 backwards. The whale itself is fun to explore and photograph, but the real star is parked next to it, Molly's Taqueria. We've had many good tacos tacos, but this was without exception the best we've ever had. Doug, it's the attraction and the giant whale or the ghost town you can visit, but often, I don't want to sound hokey, but it's the things you do along the way. It's the memories, right? This is Americana.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's and it's always great to make discoveries that weren't something you already researched online. It's some of my favorite moments are just spotting an old billboard and taking a chance and turning off and finding a cowboy town populated by robots. You know, it's like things like that happen, and it usually ruins your schedule. You know, you've got a plan to be somewhere else, and then you're 2 hours late because you found something even better.
Now, Mark, you're in the middle of a project on Route 66 that listener Mary Beth from Tulsa, Oklahoma, left us a voicemail about. Listen.
Hello. My name's Mary Beth Babcock from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I've recently opened a souvenir shop on Route 66 called Buck Adams Cosmic Curios on Route 66. If we're going to be on Route 66 and help revitalize this beautiful history, we need a muffler man. We need a roadside attraction. So Mark Klein is going to build a 20-foot muffler man, space cowboy, that we will have.
A little bit of a plug there for Buck Adams Cosmic Curios on Route 66. That's okay. We don't mind. The show's all about it. Sorry, what is she talking about? She needs a muffler man, Mark Klein? What is she after, and how can you deliver it?
She's very optimistic, and that's good because they just passed she's able to build this. There were some sign ordinances and things, but she was able to get above that. The muffler men, they're the very iconic statues that appeared, I believe, in the early 60s. They were all over the United States. It was part of this campaign of these figures that were built for these stores they originated out of Venice, California. And, you've seen them. They're the American giants. In fact, there were, I guess, at one time about 200 of these around the country. And I do have the mold for a couple of these. So I'm actually making one for her. It's a space cowboy. And, that itself will become a huge attraction for her business.
So let me get this straight. Muffler Man comes in a mold. He's 20 feet high, but he can be he can be modified, if you like. He can be Paul Bunyan, or he can be a space cowboy.
I've got several of them in my studio right now being built. I've got one that's getting ready to go to Minnesota. He's going to be a soda jerk. I've got one that's going to go to Tennessee. He's going to be Davy Crockett. I've sent these characters all over the country. One, I'm actually revamping a piece. It's a Native American that had to be moved from Asheville, North Carolina, because of there was controversy. So, he had been there for 50 years standing in front of a Pontiac car dealership, and now he's going to be going to to Pontiac, Michigan, of all places, to a museum. So some of these pieces, you know, they were politically correct back in the day, and now they just don't. They need to find a place to live and to fit in modern society. And in most cases, there's no problem. But you find out now with statues. Robert E. Lee, just different things. Sometimes, every now and again, you run across this problem.
So, Doug, what is it, do you think, Doug Kirby, about these roadside attractions? Look, so much about our American landscape these days is cookie cutter. Every Walmart, every Best Buy, every Bennigan's looks and tastes the same as you go from town to town. It was not always so. It's the case now. Is this our best chance to preserve some eclecticism across our great land?
I think so. We love it when we find a place that is not something you saw in every town on a trip. And sometimes those attractions feel a little dangerous. You know, the walkway is a little slippery. The rails aren't maintained as well as maybe they should be. But you're kind of having an experience that is pretty unique. And things like even the muffler men, even though those are sort of cookie cutter, they're customized and you can actually make a road trip just by traveling around and checking out the muffler man. So we see people doing things like that where they'll kind of latch onto a theme and then pursue that theme in all their vacations.
Well, Amy, we talk a little bit about the muffler men, giant sharks, giant whales. What about architecture, buildings that you can actually go inside? Some of them are hot dog stands, but there are a lot more. Talk a little bit about the architecture along Route 66 that you'd like to help preserve.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, Route 66 is known for those vintage diners and motels and the neon signs, as well as those quirky roadside attractions. And so, you know, we're really seeing a whole range of buildings like that. One great example I can give is the Wigwam Motels, which have huge popularity. These are motels. There's two that are open. One's in Holbrook, Arizona, another one in San Bernardino, California. And when you go, you actually stay in your own concrete wigwam. And so it's something which is an experience, not like a generic motel room. So those are the kind of things that people will go out of their way to try to experience.
Well, we got this tweet from Julieta with a great picture. I'm driving just now while listening to your show. I quickly pulled over and stopped to photograph this roadside dinosaur when I saw it located at 926 State Road 20, Interlochen, Florida. a great message with a great photo from a 1A listener. Mark, internet culture has had a big effect on roadside attractions. The selfie, people wanting to post photos, maybe not lingering and appreciating for as long as they should. We've had a number of people write to us kind of lamenting Instagram and selfie culture and what it's done to the feel of roadside culture. How do you feel about it?
Well, it's definitely done a lot to kick it up several notches way into the stratosphere, because, I mean, you think about it, back in the old days, people would take Polaroids or take pictures, send the pictures off for their vacations, and, you know, so it took a while for the word to get around. I mean, I got a really cool picture of me standing beside one of these giants when I was about 7 years old, and I like looking back at this, but now, instantaneously, it's, people will just they'll make it part of their life's mission to get to these places just because it's so publicized now. I mean, and I think it's really just built up the I think it's really caused a big influx in roadside attractions these days.
Well, it definitely helps spread the word. But Beth wrote to us, honestly, there's a small part of me that doesn't want to share this with 1A because I don't want people to ruin it. Is that part of the appeal of roadside attractions, discovering them by accident and not knowing what to expect? Doug, have some of the internet and social media habits that we have, I don't know, ruined the element of surprise? I mean, you want to go there because you've seen it on Instagram?
Yes, and there are things. There's a place called The Thing in Arizona. It's the mystery of the desert. It's a truck stop, and you pay a dollar, you see all these sort of weird displays, and at the end you see what the thing is. And for years, we just didn't reveal what the thing was because we thought it ruined the attraction. And, you know, after a while, we started to see everybody's taking pictures of the thing and just putting them up online. So, you know, things like that you lose. If you don't want to see what the thing looks like, then don't Google it. We think that there's still things to discover. We every day, pretty much, we add something, we map something new onto the website. It'll be weird things you'd never think there'd be an attraction for, like where Elvis got his hair cut before going into the Army in 1958. There's a in Arkansas, the Fort Chaffee Barbershop Museum. You can go there and see the chair and where Elvis got his hair cut.
Well, Amy, talk to me a little bit more about Route 66. As people travel west toward California, in just a minute we're going to be talking about California, especially Southern California, which has so many of these roadside attractions. This is a slice of Americana that has made its way into commercialism, into commercials. In a lot of ways, commercialism was the genesis of a lot of this, selling orange juice or hot dogs or just weird experiences.
That's absolutely right. You know, I think when Route 66 was first designated as a U.S. highway, and that was in 1926, you know, that timing really corresponded with the advent of driving for pleasure or for fun. You know, prior to that time, if you were taking transportation, it wasn't always easy or comfortable, and it was really a way to get from point A to point B. So this was, you know, as automobiles became more readily available to Americans, people were free to travel the open road. And so along Route 66, and again, with the advent of different materials, things like fiberglass and new uses for concrete, people were able to build things that were designed to entice people off the road and to come into their businesses. So this was really something which was, very much of that time.
These days, a lot of people are relying on inflatable stick men. You know, you see them on top of car dealerships or other places.
Awful.
Awful? Does that go against the spirit?
It's just a cheap way out, I think. I mean, when I said anybody can become a roadside artist, that doesn't mean anybody can become a good roadside artist.
That's Mark.
There's no commitment. No commitment in an inflatable.
Yeah.
You can put a lobster on your restaurant and take it down the next day.
Mm-hmm. Or an inflatable Statue of Liberty or those weird dancing men we see all over America. That's Mark Klein, artist and preservationist, creator of roadside attractions, including Foamhenge. Also, Doug Kirby is with us. And Amy Webb, I want to thank you for joining us. Amy is a senior field director at the National Trust for Historic Preservation, where she's working to preserve Route 66 from Missouri all the way to California. Amy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about America's roadside attractions. A few recommendations we got from listeners on Facebook. The six-story tall Lucy the Elephant in Margate, New Jersey. I've seen that. The Cathedral of Junk in Austin, Texas, and the Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. Aaron tweets us, are roadside attractions thought of as uniquely American? Maybe a question we could answer. NPR newscaster Corva Coleman sent us a picture of herself in front of a giant bird. Hey, 1A, cool roadside attraction in Huron, South Dakota, the world's largest pheasant. Thanks, Cora, and thanks for your newscasts all the time. When we come back, we're going to go to California, how California has become home to some of the most offbeat roadside architecture in America, like an inn shaped like a toad, a hot dog restaurant shaped like that giant bulldog. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Todd Zwillick. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the NPR Wine Club. Discover hand-selected wines from award-winning vineyards around the world. Learn the stories behind each one and enjoy unique bottles inspired by your favorite NPR shows, all with the convenience of home delivery. A special welcome offer includes a bottle of Weekend Edition Cabernet Sauvignon. If you're 21 years or older, join in the fun at nprwineclub.org.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator. In every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Listen every afternoon on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are talking about roadside attractions all across America. Here's what one listener, a self-identified roadside attraction enthusiast, called in to say.
My name is Gabriel, and I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm a roadside attraction enthusiast. It started with the Weird Al song, Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota.
Well, I had 2 weeks of vacation time coming after working all year down at Big Roy's Heating and Plumbing.
So one night I've been to probably 50 different roadside attractions.
I said, kids, if you could go anywhere in this great big world now, where'd you like to go to? They said, Dad, we want to see the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. They picked the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota.
I have been to the Twine Ball. It's wonderful. I think it's one of the things that makes America very unique, because in Europe, where I lived for a couple of years, they don't do that sort of thing. So we do. And I think it's quirky and weird, and I love the quirky and weird.
Like Elvis Orama, the Tupperware Museum, the Boll Weevil Monument, Cranberry World, the Shuffleboard Hall of Fame, Poodle Dog Rock, and the Mecca of Albino Squirrels. We've been to Ghost Town, Steam Parks, Wax Museums, and the place where you can drive through the middle of a tree scene, Alligator Farms and Tarantula Ranches, but there's still one thing we gotta see. Well, we crossed the state line about 6:39, and we saw the sign that said Twine Ball Exit 50 miles.
Weird Al is a national treasure. All of these roadside attractions are national treasures, but none of them is bigger than Weird Al himself. They're quirky. They're weird. They're so very American. I want to talk about the Integratron right outside of Joshua Tree on the other side of the mountains from L.A. It's in the desert. It's a big dome. It's a sound bath, I'm told. And because it's a sound bath, I want to play you a clip. Here's what it sounds like when you go inside the dome of the Integratron. And that's just one brief sampling of life inside the Integratron. Doug, the founders of the Integratron claim that it was messages from Venus that inspired their construction. I have been told that the experiences inside are pretty remarkable. What can you tell me?
Well, that was built by a guy named George Van Tassel in 1953, supposedly using instructions from the planet Venus. And, it's no surprise it's in the desert in California. You can find a lot of really strange things out here. And there's a certain freedom to, if you have a belief or you have an idea, you can find a patch of land somewhere and possibly build it. And at some point, it may become a tourist attraction, which the Integratron is a bit of a tourist attraction now.
Well, that is just north of Joshua Tree in Southern California. And I want to go to California now because Jim Hyman is with us. He's executive director of art book publisher Tosh in America and author of California Crazy, American Pop Architecture. Jim, great to have you.
Hi, Todd. Nice to be here.
Well, the Integratron is just one example in Southern California. It's a neat, very well-constructed wooden and plaster dome, I should say. But your book spans all over California and many, many of the quirky buildings and conceived architecture around Southern California over the years.
Oh, yeah. The focus is certainly on Southern California for a variety of reasons. And there's still, quite a few extant buildings that are around. Many have disappeared, but there's still enough that you can do a nice little trip around Southern California and find some good examples.
Well, what is it about Southern California, Jim? It's become something of a mecca, as you mentioned, for wacky roadside attractions and architecture, really during the 20th century. And many of the photos in your book date back to the 40s and 50s, some of them earlier. But these spots actually in a city, Los Angeles, why did L.A. and Southern California become such an attractive place for roadside architecture and roadside attractions?
Well, there's a variety of reasons. Primarily, L.A. is a city that was built around the automobile. It's the only 20th century or, in fact, any city in the world that was built around the automobile. And that really the idea of these buildings being here. Also, you have to look at Hollywood being very influential because many of the buildings were designed by art directors for the movies, and the craftsmen who were making sets for movies were also, being employed by some of these individuals who built giant toads, giant owls, giant pigs. And you also have space. So in the 1920s, there was also a cultural zeitgeist that was going on in terms of whimsical things happening. And so you could, make these kind of buildings, and they proliferated quite a lot in the 1920s. Kind of between 1920 and 1940 was the heyday of these particular buildings.
Give me a very, very brief tour of some of your favorites. I know you're a curator. Maybe you don't pick favorites, but I'm sure you have a couple.
Oh, well, yeah. If I were to go around town today, I would take you to the Idle Hour in the San Fernando Valley, which has been completely restored. It's this giant barrel. And in the back beer garden, there's a giant dog. That's a replica of one that was on the roadside on Washington Boulevard. I'd take you to the Tamale. That's in Pico Rivera. Then we'd go down to Randy's Donuts, which is probably one of the most well-known ones. Right near Los Angeles International Airport, the giant donut. Very, very popular. Donuts are really good. Then we'd go down to Venice, and I'd take you to the Claus Oldenburg giant binoculars that serve as an entrance to the underground parking. And then soon to be is going to be the Tale of the Pup, who the owner, Bobby Green, who also owns the Idle Hour. He's the current guy who's really restoring a lot of these buildings. He's going to bring back the giant hot dog to Hollywood. So that would be
You talk about that as though I know what it is. The giant hot dog to Hollywood went away and it's coming back. Is that what I think it is? A big hot dog stand?
Yes, it's a giant hot dog.
Fantastic.
And it was on La Cienega Boulevard for many years. It was opened after the war in 1947 by two vets. It was there for a long time, and then the property became too valuable, and so they took it and put it a couple blocks away, stood there for a while, and then it was removed about 8 or so years ago, put into storage. So it's a concrete hot dog, and you get your hot dogs out of the hot dog. So it's coming back.
Sold. I mean, if I'm going to get a hot dog in L.A., I think I'm going to the giant hot dog, which is really
for sure.
Yeah, which is really part of the point. But I want to ask you gentlemen about commercialism on another level. Clearly, many of these buildings were meant to attract people off the roadside, buy the hot dog, buy the root beer, for sure, a way to catch the eye. But things have gotten a little bit trendy. I got to tell you that I saw a car commercial last night, Doug, where the car in question was taking a very, very exciting group of young people to a dinosaur park, past a big gaping whale or a shark, a giant chili pepper, the Neon Museum in the Nevada desert outside of Las Vegas. I hope that this stuff isn't in danger of getting co-opted and ruined by corporate culture.
Oh, by the way, those dinosaurs were some of my pieces.
I know. That's why.
And, but you know my name. I didn't get any royalties. So.
Oh.
But yeah, those were done for George Barber down in Alabama. He's a multi-billionaire down there. And I did a full-size replica of Stonehenge for him as well. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
Well, let's talk about some of the commercialism of this. I mean, it's just one commercial, but I've seen more and more of this stuff. It's not going to get sanitized, is it?
People get excited to see this stuff, in... Whenever one appears in a movie, you know, if a muffler man appears in a movie or, the opening of The Sopranos or something, you know, people are immediately sending us tips to add that to the story that you tell about these statues. So we don't think these things hurt them if there's some popularizing going on. There's enough things out there. It's not really a zero-sum game. Mm. And actually, you find attractions cropping up coming out of the world of pop culture. So you've got people that just go to Walking Dead filming sites or Hunger Games sites. You've got things like Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. But you also have Woodstock, Illinois, which is the town where the movie Groundhog Day was shot. So, you know, there's a lot of things out there for everybody.
It's a love-hate relationship, I believe. I mean, but ultimately, it really is about commercialism. These people build these figures so people will be attracted to their businesses.
Well, Mark, you're still so active in this world. I am told that every year on April 1st, April Fool's Day, you create a prank, some of these pranks have stayed in place and become attractions themselves. This might go back to the story that you told about building a Statue of Liberty when you were just a wee lad of 7 years old. But tell me about one of your pranks, why you did it, and what it became.
Well, you know, that's how Foamhenge started. That started out, I unveiled it on April Fool's Day in 2004, and usually my displays last only 30 to 90 days, but Foamhenge became so foam-nominal that we decided to keep it there for about 12 years until Natural Bridge became a state park. Then it had to move. We moved it to it still exists, but it's in Centerville, Virginia. But in the interim, it got on a Geico commercial. It was an answer on Jeopardy. It was on NCIS. So, I mean, you know, these are the things that, you know, get us excited. We love seeing how these pieces have made it to the, you know, to the mainstream, even though they are, you know, you try to, you know, keep them sort of off the grid, too. I mean, like I said, sort of a love-hate relationship with that.
Well, we heard from David and Laura, who sent us this email. By far the most quirky tourist site we've ever visited is the House on the Rock in Iowa County, Wisconsin, near Dodgeville. It's the most incredible eccentric museum we've ever seen. Music machines, some of the size of large rooms, merry-go-rounds, theater organs, much more. It seems clear to us that Mr. Jordan became a bit of an OCD about his different collections over the years. It's just a bit of a trap, since once you start going through the museum part, it's very, very difficult to escape. Jim Hyman, let me take you out of California east to I-95 out east here, because you talk about the relationship of roadside attractions with the American highway system. One of the roadside attractions we've heard a lot about from listeners is south of the border. It's just off I-95 on the border between South Carolina and North Carolina. It has restaurants, it has shops, kitschy arcades, even a motel, big truck stop. People are greeted by signs all along in the approach with the mascot called Pedro, and there's a 97-foot Pedro. It's a little dated, I have to say, the caricature of Pedro leaning up against a cactus that you see on a lot of the billboards leading up to south of the border. But one listener wrote us to say drivers are assaulted for miles south and north with horrendous signs announcing south of the border's arrival. So some people love them, some people hate them. How does the architecture world view these stops? Because south of the border, I have to say, is a, pardon me, folks on the East Coast, it's a pretty lowbrow place.
Yeah, it's interesting because this whole idea of roadside architecture has primarily been dismissed for many, many years by architectural critics who saw it as kind of junk architecture. That changed significantly in 1972. When Robert Venturi, Denise Scott Brown, and Steven Eisenhower came out with a book called Learning from Las Vegas, they took an in-depth look at roadside architecture and changed that perception of what architecture was all about. And so they took this idea of Mies van der Rohe of less is more. Venturi said less is a bore. And so they were, looking at signs and Vegas as part of the fabric of American architecture and the real architecture that people look at, not something that was constructed in a modernist view. So, I think that, that view has changed and people have to kind of look at all types of architecture now in their context and not just, from a perspective of kind of an elitist point of view. So it's broadened. And I think that's, that's obviously a good approach to looking at our built environment.
So many more recommendations from 1A listeners. The Pink Cadillac Diner in Natural Bridge, Virginia. The world's largest freshwater fishing museum in Hayward, Wisconsin. Carhenge in Nebraska. And on the east end of Long Island, there's Flanders, the Big Duck, which is now a little mini museum. Mark Klein, before I let you go, you are the founder and creator of Dinosaur Kingdom and Foamhenge. Just take a couple of seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, a couple of best recommendations from you, aside from your own place.
Well, first of all, I had coffee at the Pink Cadillac Diner today, so that's great. There's just so many. It's like trying to pick out your favorite kid. There's just so many of them. But I just encourage anybody just to get online and look up some of these unique places. This is what makes us America, folks. And just discover for yourself and be the hero of your own adventure.
A big slice of Americana just off the highways from sea to shining sea. From south of the border, on the border between South Carolina and North Carolina on I-95, closer to where we are in Washington, all the way to the Integratron outside of Joshua Tree in Southern California. That was Mark Klein. He's creator of attractions including Dinosaur Kingdom and Foamhenge, both in Virginia. Mark, a pleasure.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Also, Doug Kirby, founder and publisher of the website Roadside America. Doug, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
And Jim Hyman, executive editor for the art book publisher Tosh in America and author of California Crazy, American Pop Architecture, where you can leaf through and see all of the crazy buildings around Southern California. Jim, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Join us tomorrow. Joshua will be back on 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thanks for having me.